All right, everybody, let me give you a quick heads up. Right now, calls and questions are both really light. So today would be a great opportunity. I'm sure the holidays are having an effect here. But if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all you want to talk about, today would be the day for you to get through. Just press 1 on your phone. If you do that right now, I promise we will get to you. As a matter of fact, right now, we don't have enough calls to get through an hour, and we were planning on 2. We were going to do 1 hour of general questions and also 1 hour of destination health. So if you want to get through, now is your chance. Press 1 on your phone. We'll screen those calls. We're going to go ahead and get started, and We'll get through the calls and see what happens. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question, pick up the phone. We'll talk about it here on the air. I'm going to get to those calls here in just a couple minutes. You know, I talk a lot about planning, goal setting, getting things in writing, and we do a lot more than just talk about it here. I've always been a big proponent of getting things in writing, having plans, and this is the time of year that makes a lot of sense. So take some time, look over your past year, and plan the upcoming year. But you have to do it a lot more than just once. But this is the time to kind of get the big picture view. And that's something I've been doing myself here for the last week or so. I'd like to do it around the holidays because things are a little quiet, not as much going on. It's hard to get a lot of work done this time of year. People take a lot of time off. And you're always chasing people around and work gets interrupted. And you take a week like Thanksgiving when it's already a 4-day weekend and nobody seems to do much that week. And we have several of those coming up. So take advantage of those down times to do your planning. This is a good time to do big picture planning. And I'll give you an idea of how that looks. For me, right now, I have some very specific projects I'm working, but I'm also creating the big picture for me for 2016. What am I going to be focusing on? And I've got several projects, and I have to, you know, pick and choose what can we realistically get finished, what's most important to our listeners and our tribe members. And a couple things, some of them are things we've already been working on. Some of them are brand new, and some of them are just in the planning stage now. So some of the things I will be focusing on, obviously, the expanded CMC is going to be a very big project. That's a specific project already in the works. We have 2 new lanes that we're adding to that I'm very excited about. You know, we have the CMC the way it's always been, which is designed to help owner-operators leased to a carrier be as profitable as possible. That's the bulk of what the CMC is all about. Now we're adding 2 more lanes to that concept. So we have lane 1, which is all about getting started. And I'm very excited about that. That's something I love to teach people. It's how to get started in this industry. And lane 3 is all about moving to your own authority, which is another big project for us. We're going to be putting a lot more time and resources into helping people make that transition correctly. You know, there was a time where I told people, just don't do it. I saw so many people fail at it. And it, even when I told people not to do it, it wasn't that I didn't believe that you could succeed at it. You can. There's a lot of opportunity. The problem is people don't do it right. And there aren't a lot of resources available to help you do it right. So we are working with some partners, some new partners, and creating those resources. And lane three in the CMC will be about that. Lane one, getting started. We have the best resources already. That's an area that we've worked on a lot. We've just never made it part of the CMC because we didn't have room for more people. We've been sold out for years. Now we have more room. We can add these lanes. So those are a couple of the big projects we're working on in that area, all built around the CMC. We are working on helping more people move into gliders because we're just a little worried that some of the legislation that has targeted gliders, nothing definite yet, but we just want to make sure that if somebody wants a glider, they understand what they are and they have access to having one built. And we're looking at some more options for building more custom gliders. So we've got a couple things in the works around gliders. One of the new areas that, you know, I've somewhat avoided past, not because I didn't think it was important, but because I wasn't finding any really good resources. But I've said that I keep looking, and I may have one. I may have a resource. This is a little early yet, but we're talking to them, and there may be some promise here. And that is in the area of new trucks. You know my stance on new trucks. I don't want to own them. I am happy owning gliders and pre-emission trucks. I'm happy helping people with those things because they work. We know they work. We know they're profitable. We know they have very, very low risk. There's not a lot of risk in buying a glider. There's not a lot of risk in buying an older truck and putting some money into it. We can predict what is going to happen with those two options. For me, the new trucks have been too risky. Some people do amazing with them, getting excellent fuel economy, low maintenance cost, but that's not the majority. We have way, way too many stories of people really hating their new trucks. Now, I've always said, if I had to buy a new truck, I usually say it like if somebody put a gun to my head and made me buy and own and operate a new truck, I would own a Cascadia with a DD15. I think that's the best engine on the market. I think it's the one showing the least problems and the best fuel economy and the lowest maintenance. So, but it's, you know, I've never been able to bring myself to really recommend one because of the uncertainty and the risk. But I've been looking to see if there are things you can do to minimize those risks. Are there driving practices or maintenance practices or ways to spec that truck or operate that truck that would make things better? Now, I found a dealer and I've been talking to them. They are a Freightliner dealer, multiple locations. And they are telling me that they have a much better performance rating when it comes to keeping these trucks running than most other dealers. And it's a program they've put together. They spend time with, and they are really, they love the owner-operator market. They do sell to some big fleets, but they really love the owner-operator market. And they have a program where they spend time with their owner-operator training them, and they are seeing better results and fewer maintenance problems. That intrigues me. That's the kind of resource I've been looking for, and that may be This isn't a definite yet, but that may be one of the areas that we spend some time focusing on in 2016. How do we, if you are going to own one of these trucks, or if you already own one, and a lot of our listeners do, and I know that, and I want to be able to offer them more, we just haven't found what that more is yet. So it's something that I'm always working on in the background. I've been pretty frustrated with it, but I may now have some ideas and some resources, and we will continue to work on that as part of our overall plan for 2016. I would love to be able to bring things to you that really work. If you own one of these trucks, or you have to own one, or you're going to own one, or you want to own one, I would love to find resources we could help you with. I don't want to bring stuff that doesn't work, though. And that's where we've been stuck. I haven't really found things that I'm confident of that work when it comes to the new trucks. But we're going to continue working on that. I have some possibilities, and we'll be talking about that. So, and of course, we are going to continue moving forward on the health initiative as well. There is so much there that we can bring to you, the listeners and tribe members, that will make a huge difference in your life. I'm excited about that area because there are so many things we could do. I wish I could do that many things on a new truck to make them healthier, but we can certainly do that with you and your body. So that is certainly going to be a big area for us. We'll talk about that more. I'm going to get to a break. When we come back, we're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up, if you joined the show here in the last couple minutes, when we started the show, the calls were really, really light, and now they are starting to roll in. But questions are still light. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, today would be your day. Press 1 on your phone. If you do it right now, I promise we'll get to you. We are going to do 1 hour of general questions, which we're in the middle of now. And then we're going to do 1 hour of destination health. So if you have health-related questions, today's a great day to get through. Press 1 on your phone, and we'll get to you. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. That was a just kind of a quick overview of the process that I go through at the end of every year. It's a great time of year to do it. Then all throughout the year, I work more on getting real specific about plans and projects, and we have some really exciting projects I'll be talking about coming up here soon. But take this time of year to get a really good big picture of the things you want to accomplish in 2016. If you want any help with that, or if you have any questions, by all means, ask me. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Mississippi. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I actually have a second question after my maintenance one, that listening to you talk. But first, I have a 2007 Coronado, and coming up on the end of the first year of owning this truck, the first full year. And that being said, I'm going to be at about 104,000 miles at the end of the year, about $27,000 of maintenance, which will put me at about 25.8 cents a mile. Now, I know that's a little high from what I've been hearing, but considering I've had a couple big ticket items right out the door I had to purchase through the year, like a turbo, six-pack, CAC, a rim, tires, things like that, is that really outlandish, or for the first year of having a truck?
Is this a Series 60?
Yes, sir, it is, a 1270 GR.
A 1270 GR in an 07?
I'm sorry, 14 liter. I'm
14
stuck
liter,
on want
okay.
to buy a 12.7. Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay. There are actually some 12.7 EGRs running around, not many, and they were almost all in 2004 trucks. So what did let's go through some of these big ticket numbers. What was the cost on the turbo?
The turbo was $2,500.
Okay. The you said a six-pack of injectors. What was that cost?
I believe that was closer to $2,000.
Okay, so we're at about 45. What other big ticket stuff?
The CAC was $1,300. Fan clutch was a roadside breakdown, which cost me $1,300 total. I have to replace the EGR valve, which is going to cost me $1,400.
Okay. So on those trucks, honestly, those aren't big ticket. The $2,500 might start to approach, you know, something we would call big ticket. $1,200, $1,300, it seems like every time you pull in the shop with one of these trucks, you're going to pay that. You know, if we took those off, we're still at $20,000. So you're still at 20 cents a mile. Any modifications or upgrades in there?
No, I had the Fleet air filters, and that's pretty much the only modification. I know I had to do one axle of brake drums with brakes, three steer tires and a steer rim, and then just normal routine maintenance with oil changes and oil analysis.
Yeah, okay. Tires, even though they're big ticket, they are just routine maintenance. They're things we have to replace. Now, if we do all 10 tires in the same year, or, you know, outfit the whole truck, whether it's wide singles or whatever, that's certainly going to increase our maintenance cost for that year. And then there's a good chance the next year will be lower, because normally a lot of our tires can make it more than a year. So that's one of those things that it can certainly swing in a year that we buy a lot of tires. Just to give you and all the listeners an idea of where we are on maintenance costs. Running my fleet of trucks for all the years that I did, and I'll give the most current numbers. 2012 was the last year I owned those trucks. All of my trucks operating in that year were all pre-emission. One was a glider. The other one were trucks that I bought brand new pre-emission. But all of them, with the exception of the glider, had over 1 million miles on them. So these were trucks that you might expect the maintenance cost to go higher on because of their age. But my goal was to always keep my maintenance cost for a two-year period. I always, when I set a goal on maintenance cost, I did a two-year period because of what I just talked about with tires. So if you average out 2 years, it's more accurate. My goal was to always keep my maintenance cost under 7 cents a mile, and I did that consistently. So that is what I always set as, this is what's possible with pre-emission trucks. If you do all the right things, if you have, you know, a good oil sampling program, you're using the EcoPure to keep oil change costs down, you're using the FAST to keep injector problems down, we're using the Fleet air filters, so we're not always buying air filters, We use counteract balance in the tires. We do all MD alignments. If we do all those maintenance things that we talk about, that was what was possible, a target of 6 or 7 cents a mile, even on million-mile trucks, was achievable. Then we started looking at emission trucks starting in with just EGR in 04 and 05 and then moving to DPF in 08 and then SCR in 2010 and beyond. And every new addition to the emissions is increasing that number. On your truck, on an 07, which is still the first round of emissions, our target is 11 cents a mile. If we get everything operating as good as we're going to get it, you're still going to spend 11 cents a mile. I very seldom ever see anybody beat that in a two-year period. So that just tells us that even a, you know, no matter how well you do it, you're going to spend, you know, 5 cents more a mile than you would on a pre-emission truck, and that is harder to hit on that truck. Now, when we go to DPFs, that number jumps up to about 17 or 18 cents a mile. And honestly, with the new SCR trucks, it seems like it's more right around 20. So you still have a lot of room for improvement, but this was your first year with the truck. So yes, if you're working towards some of these things that will lower that maintenance cost, you have room to shave off 10 to 12 cents off of your expense. And that's what I would be shooting for. I would be looking at those things, you know, the EcoPure bypass filter, the fast fuel system. You already have the fleet air filter, the good tire maintenance and alignment with a good MD alignment and the counteract beads. And when you get all those things in place, there's a much better chance that you're going to get down around that, you know, 12 cent a mile range instead.
Okay. Speaking of the EcoPure, I'm doing 50,000 miles between oil changes, and the only reason I'm changing the oil is because of the base and the oxidation is dropping real low. Now I know I can do the Lubrifiner TRT filters to replenish the base, but will that the EcoPure, I don't believe, would do me any good with that aspect. What is your opinion
with,
there?
With what aspect? The base itself or the maintenance
well,
cost?
To the maintenance costs for longevity of oil,
oh,
longevity
no,
of the oil change.
Oh, sure it would. If you can do 50,000 without the filter, you're going to do 250,000 with it.
Okay, so that would help the base and the oxidation, which is why I changed the oil now?
It'll definitely help the oxidation, and there's a good chance it will help the base, and I'll explain why. And a lot of bypass filters wouldn't help those. Most bypass filters only filter out the solids. The EcoPure has the evaporation unit, which filters out the liquid contaminants, and those are the ones that really contribute to that base and oxidation deterioration. So when we can get the excess moisture and the excess liquids out of that oil, then your base is going to last a lot longer, and the oxidation should go away. But the base we can replenish with the Lubrifiner filters, which is cheap and easy. And the oxidation, if there's no other problems, I don't get too worried about oxidation on its own. So if you have an engine, you must have a pretty clean burning engine here if you're making it 50,000 without the EcoPure, which means you're going to make it 200 to 250,000 miles without an oil change with the EcoPure, which cuts your maintenance cost by quite a bit, more than half on that part of it.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways you're going to get that maintenance cost down. Good questions, and you've got good numbers there. Congratulations. That helps a lot. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, the questions rolled in pretty heavy there, so we are screening those and getting to those now. If you're on hold right now with a health question, we're going to hold you to the next hour for Destination Health. So just know I'm not ignoring you. We'll get to you in the Destination Health show. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us off the air, we have a Tribe Care team that is there to help. Grab something to write with. I'll tell you how to get a hold of them. They can help you with all kinds of things. If you want to get more information about the CMC, or if you want to get signed up, and you do want to get signed up, they can help you with that. If you need help with your tax and accounting this year, if you're looking for somebody who really understands drivers and owner-operators when it comes to taxes, we can help you with that. If you need help in our store, if you need help tracking your fuel mileage, whatever it is, give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. You can always check out our store as well, and that's letstruck.com/. Let's get back to the phone calls. We're off to Idaho. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Kevin, I've been listening to you for a while, and I took your advice and went out and bought an older Mac, and I'm loving it and everything. But I'm having a few issues. I took the 10-speed out and put an 18-speed in. When I wind it up in the bottom half of top gear, a lot of times the computer shuts me off at 1,700 RPMs. I'm trying to figure out who I could go talk to. I've talked to two Mac dealerships, and they said they didn't mess with ECMs.
What? Well, who would then?
That was my question. I don't know if it was
it was
a small enough dealership. They didn't want to deal with that kind of big of an item or what.
You know, it's one thing when we own a Peterbilt that could have two or three, you know, different engines in it. I've always recommended in that case you go directly to the engine shop. But there are two brands of trucks, both owned by the same company now, that have their own proprietary engines, Volvo and Mack. You buy a Mack truck, you get a Mack engine. You buy a Volvo truck, it could have a Volvo engine. They don't have separate engine shops. It is the dealer that has always serviced those things. So that seems like an odd answer to me from a Mack dealer. And the only recommendation I would have is try a bigger Mack dealer.
Do you have anybody that's worked with their trucks that would have any kind of a recommendation on a Mac, references or anything?
You know, we're going to have to throw that out. I don't have anybody. As much as I, you know, have talked about the early 2000 Macs and I love those trucks and engines, I don't really have a good source. I just don't know that many people that own them. But we can certainly throw it out there. And, you know, if you are listening to this, you can always send us that recommendation a couple ways. You could post it on our Facebook page, or you can send us a recommendation to email it to support@letstruck.com, and then we'll post it. And if I get a good recommendation, I'll talk about it on the air as well. So, I'm just thinking, and I just don't even know. I don't have any good Mac dealers that I necessarily recommend. This should be a really easy fix, though. I mean, this should be a matter of just plugging into the ECM and changing that parameter. You might want to call Pittsburgh Power. I know that they had done some work on some of the early Mac ECMs, and they had worked on developing a power box for it. So they should have the ability to plug into that and change that parameter.
Now, it's been a good truck. I haven't made any modifications other than taking the 10-speed out and going to an 18-speed. But I'm averaging 6.5 miles a gallon on fuel and just loving the truck.
Excellent. And that truck has the potential with the, you know, all the standard modifications we talk about, muffler, fleet, air filter, FAS, air tabs, flow blow. You get that stuff on that truck and a good set of low rolling resistant tires, and that is easily capable of 8+ miles to the gallon.
Okay. Now, I've talked to several people that have listened to you, and they're running other trucks, but I haven't run across anybody that's really taken a Mac and really got intensive into the things that you can do with one. And if I could find a way to get a hold of somebody, I don't get on Facebook or anything, so it's kind of awkward for me to interact with anybody. But I would love to hear from somebody that's dealt with a Mac.
Well, other than, you know, like I say, call Pittsburgh Power with this issue. But other than that, all the recommendations we make, in fact, I'm trying to think if there's anything I recommend. What year is this one?
01 E7.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything I recommend that won't work on this truck. And when I say 8 is possible, that's not that hard to reach 8. In the right operation, and you do enough modifications on this. Yeah, well, I was going to say 9 is not out of the question for this truck.
I've seen it, you know, in short spurts, you know, when I'm in a fuel chain, a tank of fuel. I've seen 8.5 and 9 every once in a while, but not real often.
Yeah, if you just start working on the modifications, and this truck's no different. I recommend the same things in the same order, and you start working through those, and those 8s will start to get very consistent, and 9, like I say, isn't out of the question.
So, another thing I wanted to mention, you talk about the lease purchase programs, and I'm one of the gentlemen that in the 70s, I got into one of those lease purchase programs. I was doing very well, but the owner-operator association associated with the trucking company saw that I was running in the top quarter of the trucks, and they went back to the company and complained that they were financing the truck. They come to me, and I had to take the truck and get it financed elsewhere or give it back. And so I wound up giving it back, but I'm right there with you on the lease purchase programs. Anytime they want to do something, they're pulling the strings, not you.
Yeah, there's a crazy example. You were doing well with one, and they pulled the strings. That's the problem. They're unpredictable, and there's just not enough control. It puts you at too much risk, and you saw that. So I'm glad you're doing it different this time.
Oh, I took your advice. I went ahead and I paid cash for the truck before I started, and I've talked to you a couple of times, and I've got an old lead sled trailer that I'm pulling, and I've got another step deck that I'm putting together, and the Lord's blessed. And I went over to Landstar, and shoot, I hardly haul more than 25,000 or 30,000 pounds, and the rates are good, and I've got to where I don't run about 6,000 miles a month.
Outstanding. I love that. So keep up the good work. Call me once in a while, and we'll work with you. Call Pittsburgh Power. They'll work with you. We'll get this to be a good, solid 8+ mile per gallon truck. Let's go to Iowa. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I was listening to your intro there about goals, and I've been thinking about my goals for the next 10 to 15 years. And right now, I've got an office job. About 6 years ago, as a company driver, and I'm feeling the call of the road again. I loved it out on the road, and it's kind of like, do I stay with the safe bet and work in the office and maybe retire with enough money, or do I become an owner-operator and make sure I have enough money when I retire?
Got it. Okay. You know, this, I can probably already hear it in your voice, and I think you already know it, too. I don't think you're one of those guys that likes the safe bet.
Pretty much, right. Yeah.
Yeah, there is an attraction to the safe bet, because sometimes it's easy to just sit back and say, hey, you know what, this is going to work. If I just stick with this, follow the rules, set this much money aside, I'll retire, everything will be fine. And there's an attraction there. But then it starts to get really boring. And boring is just boring. I mean, I think you are looking for the challenge again. Part of that's being out on the road. I mean, I had to find a way so that I could get back out on the road. And it's not driving a truck for money, but it was driving a truck to travel around and do our events. And I miss being on the road. So as much as I know I need to be in the office doing what I do, I had to find a way so that I could have both. So the music's playing. Let me get to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that some more. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment here, and I'm going to get to as many calls as I can. Then we're going to come back and do an hour of Destination Health. So at the end, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. But don't hang up, because we're going to come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the call. So I was talking with Dan in Iowa about some of his long-term goals. Dan, let me kind of give you, when I look back over some of the hardest decisions I've made, you know, the ones that really are kind of scary, it feels like once you make this decision, there is no going back. And I'll tell you the biggest one. After having my contract at FedEx for 25 years, and it was still a very profitable contract, I didn't have to do that much to maintain it, but it was, I knew it was holding me back from some of the projects I wanted to do here with the company we have now. That was a huge decision, because there really is no going back. I mean, it took me 25 years to get to that place at FedEx where I had those points, I had those runs. I had it made. Now, granted, I was able to sell it for a nice profit. But that was scary, thinking here I have this steady income. I could virtually retire on that contract. I made enough money. I could have retired and kept it for who knows how long, the rest of my life probably. So that was a big decision. But, you know, I looked at it and thought, I'm a little bored with it. It's a nice income. It is holding me back some. I'm a little bored with it. There's not much of a challenge anymore, and I want to go do new things. I was afraid that I was really going to regret it, and I could go through two or three other big decisions that I've made like that. There has never been 1 minute of regret, not one. I look back now and think, my God, I probably should have just done it sooner. Not that there was anything wrong with it, but it was just time. And I think that's what you're feeling here. You know, you can't really go wrong if you kept this office job and kept doing what you're doing, other than the fact that you just might be really bored and not very challenged. The risk
that's pretty much where I'm at right
trying
now.
Something. Yeah, you know, and clearly there's risk in going out and trying something new, but a lot of times I think it's the risk that we need. I think that's what keeps us alive and keeps us growing and keeps us challenged, is to get out of that comfort zone once in a while.
Yep, definitely. On a side note, I started the ketogenic diet about a month ago, and I've pretty much been consistently losing 5 pounds a week, and I got to say thank you for that.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, it's entirely possible. I know this might sound a little out there, but it just might be the ketogenic diet leading to your clearer thinking and making you want to go out and get some new challenges.
Yeah, it could be too.
Yeah. I think that you probably do need the challenge, and I think you're going to be happier with the challenge, and there's no hurry. You know, sometimes the planning part of this is enough to keep you challenged for a while. You don't have to rush right out and quit your job and go buy a truck next week or even next month. But
right.
And
on that, I was going to say, and on that, I did buy your Stop Holding the Steering Wheel and Start Driving Your Business 2 weeks ago, and I was surprised it showed up in about 4 days, which
Excellent.
Was awesome.
Good. Good. Well, that'll give you a plan to work through, and you know, that is enough, you know, to keep you challenged for a while. So you don't have to rush this, and maybe working through the process, you'll come up with a different answer. But I think at the very least, you need to pursue the idea to the point where you're working on it, and then I think you'll get a better feel for if it's what you really want or not.
Sounds good. You know, if I wait till like April, I won't have to deal with icy roads.
There you go. That's right. Good thinking. All right, great stuff. And call me as you work through this process. Call me as you work through the book. There's a lot of great stuff in there. If you go through that whole book and you actually follow the program, I virtually guarantee success. And that's hard to do. You know, well, you know what? I'm going to talk about that later. I'm going to get to some phone calls before we got to get out of here. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Rick, welcome to the program.
Kevin, glad to take my call. I got a question here. I'm in the process of narrowing it down to 2 trucks to purchase. They're both day cabs and doing local things. An 03 Mac 613 with an E7 or an 05 International 9200i.
Okay, stop right there. We're done. Easy choice. Buy the 03 Mac hands down. I don't even need to hear the specs. I don't need to hear anything else. The 03, let me just verify one thing. The 03 is definitely pre-emission, right?
I believe so, yes.
Double check that. I always get a little worried with 03. It's pretty rare, but it's possible sometimes trucks that were titled 03 could have emissions. And it's easy to check. The Mac engine was EGR, so it's external. It's easy to look at it and know. And it's about 99-1 that it is pre-emission. And that is my whole reason for this choice. There is no way I want to own an 05 anything. And the early Macs, I was talking to somebody earlier on the show, one of my favorite trucks. They get excellent fuel economy when they're set up right, and you won't be dealing with the emission problem. So this is an easy one.
Okay, yeah, because this has got it's an 03 E7, 427 horse, 10-speed, and it's only got 621 on it. It was a local fleet truck, well-maintained, very clean.
Oh, absolutely. I would be all over that thing.
Okay, I'm actually on my way to send out the oil sample now, so another day or two, I'll know for sure what's up with that truck.
Perfect. Perfect. When you get the oil sample, if you get a chance, give me a call, and we'll go over it. But that would clearly be my choice there. Let's go to Iowa. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Say, I called you about a month and a half ago, and I'd had an oil sample that came back with plague stuff on it, and I was kind of freaking out. And then we talked a little bit, and I told you that I changed a water pump and a charge air cooler. And
yeah.
Anyway, I resampled again. I don't know if she gave you the oil sample or not.
I've got it here, and this is a beautiful oil sample. What year is this?
A 2010, but it's
wow. It's
not legit, though.
Okay.
It's not. It don't
well,
have
that,
any emissions.
That makes sense, because I was going to say, I never see a 2010 ISX look this clean on an oil sample. This reminds me of a pre-emission Cat or a pre-emission Detroit. Those are about the only two engines we ever see oil samples this clean. This one looks really good. So whatever you've done took care of the little bit of problem we have, and this is a good sample.
Do you go just by oil usage for timing an in frame, or what do you go by?
Yep.
This has had an in frame done, but it's got about 600 on it, and I was just making sure that. I was just wondering what you thought on that.
I go by oil consumption almost exclusively. I don't look at much else. If the we look at oil samples, but you've got a beautiful oil sample, then oil consumption. If you're, you know, when you get to the point that you're using a gallon every 5,000 miles, we say start planning it. You've got about a year. So pick the date that you want to do it, plan a vacation, schedule it at the shop, do whatever, make sure you've got the money or start saving for it. When you get to a gallon every 3,000, you're within a couple months, and I never like to let one go past a gallon every 2,500. Those are kind
of
the...
So this one should go a long time yet, then?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much. I was definitely nervous. You know, I actually changed the oil a little sooner this time just because I was afraid something was going on, but it's weird how something that simple could really make them numbers wacky.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the beauty of the oil sample is we catch things way before they really become a problem, and this is a great example. You saw the numbers, you made the repair, and now we see the results. And this engine right now is very healthy. So just keep doing what you're doing, and that sample looks great. That's going to wrap it up. We are out of time, so I will see you back here next time. Earlier I was talking to somebody to wait for another show. There's the music. I don't have enough time to get that thought out, so... We'll wrap this up, and we'll meet back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, hold on. We are getting set up to do an hour of Destination Health. I also want to let you know this isn't set in stone yet, but I am working on a show for Thursday. Thursday is normally our day off, but I have got a weekend coming up where I have to be in class, the nutritional therapy program, all weekend long. So I need to record some weekend shows that I want to do replays. So Thursday, I am trying to put together a show with Bruce Mallinson, and I've got some equipment there at their shop. We're setting up a little mini studio for them. And the idea will be that Bruce and I will kind of co-host the show, and we will bring in their mechanics, technicians, electrical engineers to talk about different topics and answer some of the tougher questions. So we are going to do this as a recorded show on Thursday, if we're able to pull it off. So if you've got engine, mechanical, fuel mileage-related questions, Thursday will be a great time. We're going to do a full three-hour show like that on Thursday. So I know there were some truck questions we didn't get to today. We still will be recording throughout the week, but plan on joining us for that show on Thursday. Once we nail it down, I'll let you know for sure. Still a couple more details we have to work out. Let's get started. Hour of Destination Health. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to our world. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is an hour of Destination Health, the show where we talk about you, your lifestyle, your nutrition, and your health on the road. We know health and nutrition and fitness is a challenge for everybody in the country today, but it's a much bigger challenge when you live your life on the road in a truck. And we are very aware of that, and we are bringing you resources, information, and knowledge to help you be the healthiest you possible. We're not shooting to be as healthy as the rest of the population. We want to be an example for the rest of the population. We want to help truck drivers lead the field when it comes to health and nutrition, and we can do that, and we can help you do that. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Joining me right now, Kim Cockerham. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Glad to be here, Kevin.
It's always exciting. This is one of my favorite hours of the week. I love talking about this. And, you know, we're going to get to questions and help people with their specific questions. But you sent me something this week in email that I found interesting. It was an article about calcium and specifically in milk bone health. Is that something we want to talk about today?
You know what? I love that. And I love, you know, this is one of our members, Brandon, that, you know, we have this community of people out there that they read something and they don't read it just for themselves. They say, hey, I think the community will be interested in this and they want to find out your opinion of it because you're doing research and schooling right now. And so, yeah, so I thank Brandon for sending that and for anybody, you know, encourage them to send us anything that they see that they feel, you know, we need to chat about.
Absolutely. So there were actually, this article brought up a couple issues that there's a lot of debate about, there's a lot of questions about. It was primarily about whether or not drinking milk was good for bone health the way we've been told forever. Milk has calcium,
yeah.
Milk has vitamin D. Those are both things that we need to take in to have strong, healthy bones, especially as we age. And there's been a huge marketing campaign, you know, from the Dairy Association that these things are good for us. Doctors have told us that. I mean, it seems like a slam dunk. But there are some problems with it. And this article pointed some of those out. And it talked about another topic that there is a ton of controversy about, and that is the pH of our body. There's also a lot of confusion about it, though. There is no one pH. If we were to measure the pH of our saliva, we'd get one number. If we measure the pH of our blood, we get another number. If we measure the pH of our urine, we get a different number. And if we were to measure the pH in different tissue samples, we would get different numbers. And that's how it should be. There is no one number. And there's a lot of disagreement about what the right number should be, and then there's a lot of confusion about foods and whether or not they have any effect on this or not. The general medical community will tell you that your pH is what it is and foods won't change it. That's not true. Our diet changes everything. Our diet changes everything. But they, and I think we're going to come back to that part of it, and that is actually something that we're working on in the nutritional therapy program right now, so I do want to talk about that. Before we get into the specifics, though, let me kind of give a big picture of something people need to remember when they are looking at any kind of medical research, and that is, all of the testing, first off, is flawed. And virtually every test out there is flawed. It is so difficult to run a really tightly controlled nutritional experiment, research program, whatever. When you look at all the different variables that come to play, when you look at how you would run a program and all the problems that go along with that, how do you control all the factors in bulls' lives to know which factor did what? You know, you would literally, if you want to test something in a diet and how it affects health, you almost have to lock somebody up and control everything they eat, because people aren't very honest about what they eat. People don't even pay attention to what they eat. And what about smoking and health and their occupation and other things they're exposed to during their normal day? And we start looking at all these variables, and just the testing alone creates a lot of problems. But there's another bigger factor here. Whether we're talking about the daily nutritional values of what we're supposed to take in every day, what's optimal, what's healthy, whether we're talking about the effects of food or anything, what we have to remember is almost all of the data and research that is available is done on people who eat the standard American diet. That changes everything. You know, in this article, they did talk about the fact that let's talk specifically about what this article was saying. This article was saying that not only is this big push towards drinking milk for bone health not really true, it's not going to make your bones healthier, they actually claim it's going to make them worse. And I'll explain the mechanism behind that. Animal proteins can create a more acidic environment in your body. Your body will react to animal proteins with an acidic response, and then our body will work to counteract that. And just like we talk about base in an oil sample, this is the exact same issue in our body. When we get too much acid in an oil sample, we need to add base in order to counteract the acid. Your body's doing the same thing. If we get an acidic condition in our body will release components that are a base component that will counteract acid. Well, the best source of that is calcium. And one of the places our body can get calcium from is it can pull it right out of our bones. This article claims that if you eat too many foods that acidify your body will pull the calcium, leach the calcium out of your bones to counteract that. I don't know that that's been proven. You can certainly kind of connect the dots and say it all makes sense, but there are some problems with that. One of them is the fact that it's really only been looked at with people who drink pasteurized, homogenized, factory-farmed milk, because that's what 99% of the population drinks. They mentioned raw milk in the article, but they kind of blew over it. And I think it's because they don't have any real research on the difference. There's a big difference. Raw milk is not nearly as acidifying, and raw milk has all of the components we need in the right amounts. And this just comes back to eating whole, real foods and not trying to supplement. So in milk, we add vitamin D. Well, I could also take a vitamin D pill, but that's not the best source of vitamin C. The best source of vitamin D, I mean, is from whole, real foods where it's also packaged with all the other stuff. Here's another problem with this. We have moved towards low-fat milks, 2%, 1% skim milk. The vitamin D and calcium in those drinks are almost worthless because our body needs the fat in the milk to process those. So now you're looking at a population who is drinking pasteurized, sometimes now ultra-pasteurized, homogenized, low-fat milk and wondering why the vitamin D and calcium isn't helping us. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's one of those things you have to remember, like you mentioned, it's as processed as it can be as well, you know, on top of it. So, yeah, the pH thing to me, and I've had to back up and try to learn and get my arms around it too. You know, your body is, like we talk about that, such an amazing thing where it's going to do what it needs to balance itself out. But to find out, you know, just like that you mentioned, like even taking a test for pH is the results are changed the instant oxygen hits it, you know. So you kind of take everything with a grain of salt and read about it and learn like you're doing. There we go.
Yep, let me get to the break. We'll come back and talk about this because this is a good topic, and I have some more things to say. I know you do, too. So we'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. We're going to get to your calls and questions here in just a minute. Kim, you know, as we were heading into that break, you mentioned something I want to talk about. That body is really amazing, and it will always work to bring us back to what's called homeostasis, a balance of health. That's what our body is designed to do. It's been doing it for a million years. The problem we run into today is that we're not giving our body the basic building blocks it needs to do that. So we talked about the fact that, first of all, the milk comes from animals that were not raised properly. They're raised in cramped feeding lots, fed diets of grains and all kinds of other nasty stuff. They are given antibiotics and hormones that screw up the meat and the milk. So that's the first problem. Then we take that milk and we pasteurize it, ultra-pasteurize it, homogenize it. We destroy all kinds of other good things in that milk. Then we've been told that the high-fat milk is bad, so we drink 2%, 1% and skim, and we wonder why it's not making us healthy. So that's the first issue. The second issue, our diet, the standard American diet, is very high in grains. Grains have compounds called anti-nutrients. We were never supposed to eat grains. the grains will block the absorption of the little bit of nutrition we might be getting from this food. So our body, you said it, our body will return to healthful homeostasis if we give it the right food. If you eat mm-hmm. a real whole food diet, you won't have to worry about your pH level. It will be exactly what it is supposed to be. Even if you eat some foods that are too acidic, eat some foods that are too alkaline, your body will have what it needs to bring you back into balance. But when we eat all the wrong food, then what happens is we see an article like this that says, oh, milk is making your bone health worse. Well, what am I supposed to do then? If I'm not going to drink milk to get those nutrients, so then you'll read another article that counteracts that. But we just have to throw aside all of the arguments and just realize if we eat whole, real, nourishing foods, our body will take care of itself.
Yeah, and it's the beauty of that, to tell you the truth. You know, if you, you know, get fascinated with it and want to learn how to do it and say, I'm not going to do the quick fixes for certain things, you know, unless, of course, and again, we always say we're not a doctor in this, so medications you have to be on, you still talk to your doctor, but certain things, you know, don't jump and grab an antacid or something, you know, if you have certain things, find out why and find out what food you can eat to make yourself better.
Yeah, and, you know, here's another thing that's bizarre is many acidic foods are actually alkalizing in the body. In fact, one of the most acidic mm-hmm. things we could eat, limes and lemons, mm-hmm. horribly acidic, they actually alkalize your body. They have mm-hmm. the opposite
right.
effect. They create an alkaline environment in your body. But again, I don't even want people to get too worried about the pH thing, the acid alkaline, because it's really been shown that just eat a reasonable variety of good whole food and your body will maintain its pH just the way it should. Again, we've been led down the path of trying to find ways to fix these problems, and nobody agrees on what will fix them. Now we're seeing what fixes almost all of these problems is just eat whole, real, nourishing foods. Stay away from processed foods. Stay away from grains. We were never meant to eat those. Keep your sugars low. That's not a natural food. And the your body will just take care of itself.
It's a beautiful thing. It's good.
It is. What do you say we get to some phone calls?
That sounds perfect. Got some good ones.
Let's do that. Let's go to Georgia to get started. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I have a question. I started a ketogenic diet and trying to eat, cut out all grains, sugars, except, well, I had sugars cut out already, et cetera, but I cut out grains and doing the, I don't like coffee, so I'm doing it with tea in the morning and a salad and trying to keep them protein moderate, et cetera. Doing the breath analyzer, and I have the blue one. Is a 74 a good point to be at?
Wow. You're at 74?
Well, I'm most of the morning, I get up in the morning, I'll get up to 74 in the evening. In the morning, I could be 52, 65, 64.
Oh, you are.
Like that.
You are in full-blown ketosis.
Okay. Well, the other issue is I'm gaining weight.
Are you, do you know what your BMI or your body fat percentage is?
No. I mean, I'm right now about 185, and I was 140, 145 until I was in my 30s. Of course, I used to do a lot of long-distance running and stuff. Played athletic until I hurt my knee and gained 10 pounds in 1 month and never have really lost it. Just add to it every once in a while.
Okay. How tall are you?
5'8".
Okay. So you're getting to the point you don't want to gain any weight from here, obviously, unless you were doing a lot of weightlifting and you're adding muscle mass. So this is a little unusual. Have you ever checked your blood sugar?
I mean, I've last time I was to the doctor's last January, and everything is, my blood pressure is usually like 120 over 78 or something like that, and everything is low. I still play racquetball when I am not in the truck. Anyway,
got it.
But
well,
since I went on the diet, I've gained about 7 or 8 pounds.
That's unusual. That's really unusual, and it sounds like you've got the macros correct, so you are in ketosis.
If you eat too many nuts, is that a problem?
It is. That is one of the. I've got a list of about 10 mistakes you can make on a keto diet that will kind of stall weight loss. You know, there's a couple things we look at. Everybody wants to focus on weight, and that's not a bad thing to do. That's a good indicator of what might be going on. But we also focus on how do you feel. You know, I feel good at certain weights, and if I get above that, I don't feel as good. So the list I have is 10 things that could stall your weight loss, and eating too many nuts is one of them. Another one is eating too many of the kind of paleo desserts that use a lot of substitutes, but we're still eating things that are more like dessert. Nuts could be it, but I would also start looking. You know, you could play around on yourself, tweak your diet a little bit, maybe cut back on some of the nuts, maybe double check the protein. But I would also look at, you know, I would want to do a full-blown questionnaire here, because you're out of the ordinary. You're not seeing the response we would see for somebody who is in ketosis, and we'd want to start looking deeper as to why. Do you ever notice anything like being cold more than usual, or your hands or your feet are colder than normal?
No.
Okay. Because thyroid function sometimes is what we look at next. If you get everything right but you're still having thyroid issues, that can really lead to like unexplained weight gain. I've got a challenge for you if you want to take this up. I need a couple subjects for a project for the course that I'm going through. So what it is it's a full-blown workup. So you fill out a food diary for like 3 days so I can see everything you're eating and drinking. You fill out a health questionnaire, and everything would be confidential, and I'm not, you know, we're not going to talk about it on the air unless there's something you want to talk about. But then I would go through that and do a full workup. And I won't charge you for anything for it at all, and I'll use it as part of the project. If you're interested in that, that might be one way to kind of dig a little deeper and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I haven't been counting my grams or anything like that, or what I've eaten or something on that line.
See, that's what you're going to have to do next, because it's possible. See, normally, being in ketosis is a pretty good indication, but it's possible that you could just be eating too many calories, or we do have the macronutrients a little out of whack. One other quick question. Do you drink alcohol often or at all?
Never. Never.
Never. Okay. Well, that's good, because that takes one of the issues out of the equation. I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to have Lisa pick up. And if you want to go through that process, I will, because I think we're just going to have to dig deeper on this one and figure out what's going on, because this isn't a normal response. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothberg.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cocker. Kim, we're here taking your calls and answering your questions about everything health. Kim, you know, Daniel was a good example of why you need to do more than just listen to what we say for an hour every week. We're trying to give people the big picture, get them thinking about different things, give them a, you know, a new lifestyle diet to start working on. But the human body is pretty complex. The nutritional therapy program I'm going through, the analysis that they do on each patient is so in-depth and goes through so many different factors. And when we get a non-normal response to being in ketosis, virtually everybody in ketosis drops weight like crazy. And if we don't get it, it doesn't mean it's not working. It just means we need to look a little deeper and figure out what else is going on.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of the cool part about it. It can be frustrating at the same point. But, you know, you just learn a little bit more about what works for you. And I love the fact that he reached out early on to say, you know, this is what he's doing. And then it's just, you know, a lot of it's getting back to the basics and stepping back, just like you do with the truck, you know, that we have our members call in with us and, you know, put some other eyes on it too and see what you come up with.
Yeah, you know, you just brought up a great analogy. I've been saying this for years. I can come on the air and tell you all the things you should do to get better fuel mileage. And if you do them, 90%+ of the time you're going to get better fuel mileage. But every once in a while, somebody calls me and says, I did all that stuff and my fuel mileage went down. And that's when we have to start digging deeper. We have to go into troubleshooting. We have to start looking at other possibilities. This is the exact same thing, except the human body is about 100 times more complex than a truck is. So it really requires, first of all, understanding a lot of this stuff and then just digging deeper till you figure out what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. And don't give up. It can be so frustrating and you want to
give up.
No, don't give up. But don't. Mm-mm.
Yeah, don't give up. And I always want to come back to this. Whether you're getting the exact results everybody else is getting doesn't matter. If you switch to our biggest message here isn't about ketogenic. It's not necessarily about weight loss. Our biggest message here is get back to eating as much whole, real food as you can. And if you do that, you will clearly be healthier. That's just number one. There are no exceptions to that. If you're eating, you know, the standard American diet the way we've always been eating, even if you eat what you think is a healthy diet, the closer you get back to whole, real food in its natural state, the healthier you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's no downside to that. So let's get to some more phone calls because we're burning right through the time again. We're going to go to Texas. Al, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Good. What can we help you with today?
All right. I've been off the road for a few years and just getting back out there now. And been out in the truck for 2 weeks and gained 5 pounds. So
that'll happen.
Got an issue to deal with. But before I came back on the road, I went through kind of a low-carb, high-protein diet and dropped about 20 pounds. And I'm back out here now, and I'm gaining weight immediately. How do I get started? Where do I get? Do you have like a menu? Is there some place I can go and get a shopping list or items to eat? If you don't mind, I got one more thing. One of the reasons I'm concerned is that I take 3 blood pressure medications plus a patch. So I need to do something.
Okay. Things I want to help you out with and kind of warn you about is if you do this right, what we're talking about is a ketogenic diet. If you do this right, you want to work with a doctor who understands it and can monitor your medication, because this diet can be so powerful that you will be over-medicated, and we don't want to see your blood pressure drop too low because of the combination of the drugs and the diet. Now, the diet you were on has some problems. I'm sure you lost some weight on it, You mentioned that it was a low-carb, high-protein diet, and I see a lot of people make that mistake. What you really want to move to is a low-carb, high-fat diet with only moderate protein. The protein, it's very, very easy to overdo the protein and end up creating some of the same problems you had with high carbs, plus some new problems. But the healthy way to do this, it's closer to our natural ancestral diet, is low-carb, moderate protein, and high-fat. But we want to make sure they're good fats, good grass-fed butter, coconut oil, nuts and nut oils and nut butters, avocados, olives. Those are all really good sources of fat, good grass-fed beef. Not always easy to find, but those are the kind of fats we want to get into our diet. The more fat you eat, the more satisfied you're going to be, and honestly, the healthier you're going to be, and you want to get the protein moderate. Now, we don't have those resources done yet. We're working on some of those things, shopping lists and menus, but let me just give you a term to search. If you just search ketogenic diet, so it's ketogenic, just like it sounds, it's not a complicated word, ketogenic diet or ketogenic foods or ketogenic recipes, you will find thousands of them. They are based around the idea of building your fat or your meal around fat first, protein moderate, and there really is no carb number that's too low. Everybody is different, but we don't have to have carbs in our diet at all. Now, I believe in eating a lot of vegetables on this diet. I eat meat every day, all different kinds. I eat lots of eggs. I eat lots of butter. I eat a little bit of dairy products, some good grass-fed raw cheeses, things like that. I eat a lot of nuts. I eat avocados. So there is a lot of really good food you can eat this way, and it's very satisfying. But, you know, one of the reasons we haven't really pushed hard to get out a menu or a shopping list is they really are all over the place right now on the internet free.
Okay. Hanging around truck stops every day, is there anything you can pick up in there that's worth eating?
Not much. Not much at all. So what you really want to do is try spending more time in grocery store parking lots, you know, the backs of grocery stores. And I believe me, I know the challenges of being out there in a truck or a large vehicle. And once you kind of get used to it and you figure out that every grocery store in the company gets deliveries from big trucks, so there's a way in and there's a place to park. So you really do have to shop much, much more at grocery stores than at the truck stop. Now, if you're going to eat at a truck stop, it's not that hard to stay ketogenic. You know, you get a burger and get it with cheese and bacon and have them serve it on a salad instead of on a bun. That's a great option. Breakfast is easy. Bacon and eggs, fantastic. With butter, you know, stay away from the grains, stay away from the carbs, don't overdo the protein. Again, if you look online, you will find lots of resources for that. And then keep calling us, keep talking about it, because this is a big part of what we talk about here on the show. Kim, we're coming up on another break here. I've looked at the truck stops, and honestly, I can't find a thing to buy in their stores to eat.
Yeah, and you know what? I haven't gone out to them yet. I know we have some people that have strategies and stuff like that. So, you know, have Al go to, he's on Facebook, go to the Destination Health on Audio Road and, you know, get involved with the community out there and, you know, reach out to the guys and the women that are out there on the road making this work.
Yeah, I look and, you know, there are a couple things you can eat, but it's pretty tough. The restaurants at truck stops are actually a little easier than the stores themselves. The convenience stores just don't have much of anything. But getting to a grocery store two or three times a week in the truck is really not that difficult. And then you're going to find all kinds of options and all kinds of things you can eat, and even things you can keep in the truck. Well, there's the music. Kim, I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back, and time is flying today, but we're going to get to as many calls and questions as we can. Stick around.
Sounds
we'll be
good.
Right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim Cockerham is here with me. We're talking about your health and fitness on the road. This is Destination Health. Kim, what do you say we get back to some more phone calls?
That sounds perfect.
Let's head off to Massachusetts. Jacob, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin? Less fat, more tax.
Good. Yeah, what's on your mind today?
My wife is going to school to be a nutritionist, and I've been talking to her about the things I hear on your program, and she thinks that I'm crazy and that you're a coup. So,
well, I'm not surprised. Do you know which nutritional program she's going through?
I don't think she's specialized yet. I think she's just going for a general right now.
Well, there are several different. Do you know what school it is or what the title that she'll have when she's done is? Like, is she a clinical nutritionist or what?
I think she said that she'll have enough education to be an LPN if she chose to go out of nutrition.
Oh, that's even worse. All right, so let me, if she really wants to learn something, let me tell you, one of the things you could approach her with. One, she could certainly call me. I'd love to talk to her. But before she did, I have looked at everything she is being taught. I've read all those books. I have all the books that they teach nutrition in health school, whether it's medical school. I've looked at their textbooks and what they teach. Whether it's nursing, I've looked at their textbooks and what they teach. And clinical nutritionists, I've looked at their textbooks. I know what they're teaching and what they're learning. Two things. One, I want her to go find out, and I'm going to put you back on hold for a second because I'm getting a lot of background noise. You'll still be able to hear me. One, I want you to have her go look at any affiliations or sponsors that school has. She might be surprised to find out how much money they receive from companies like Coca-Cola and Nestle and big processed food companies. That kind of money dictates what's going to be taught. I just have her explore that a little bit. But then even better, if she would read any of the material that I've read, 100 books, I'll give her the whole list. If she gets both sides of the story, then I would like to see what her opinion is after seeing both sides. She's only seeing one. I've seen that. I've read it. I've studied it. I've researched it. And I've read the other side. And she's only operating from one point of view. And as long as that's the only information she has, she is going to think you're crazy and I'm crazy. Because That's what's been taught forever. Kim, you know, I know it sounds kind of arrogant, but I would make that same challenge to a full-blown medical doctor.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, in all the education, it's a small piece of it sometimes that they go to for nutrition. And it is that standard, that same American diet that we can obviously see aren't working. So I like how you encourage them, first of all, to look to see about, you know, what some of the sponsorship with the school, to see where they're coming from. And then look at some of the doctors that are out there that are finally speaking up against the grain, like Dr. Jeff Bullock and Stephen Finney, and especially Tim Noakes, who had to come back and say, a piece of my book I wrote is not right, you know, and now he's a proponent for it because it's just so proven, but it's just, you know, it's against the grain. And I admire these doctors that stand up to say there's a different way because we're killing ourselves.
Yeah,
and again,
you know,
Kevin,
when you
I'm sorry, it goes back to that whole grain. I mean, not whole grains. Oh my God, the whole food. You know that let thy food be thy medicine. You know, so let's, you know, step back and each individually look at it and look at it a different way.
Yeah, you know, take one issue, one of the biggest issues we talk about right now in this country, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and why it's exploded, why it becomes such a big problem, and then look at the advice from the American Diabetic Association. They should be the number one authority on this issue, yet their advice is basically eat whatever you want and cover it with the medicine. That is horrible advice for a disease that shouldn't even exist. It is 100% lifestyle created, and it has been proven so many times that it can be fixed, completely cured easily with diet alone, and yet the American Diabetic Association continues to give the same bad advice they've always given. It's criminal.
Yeah, it's sad. And, you know, another idea, Jacob, that maybe your wife might do even for a little while is to see how, you know, personally she feels with it too. But it's a tough one, you know, if you're going to school for it and you want to believe in it, but, you know, it comes down to maybe trying and looking at the other side as well.
That's great advice. You know, do a little research and then try it yourself. What better way to see the difference? And I'm convinced. I've seen so many stories now that the change, when you go back to eating real, whole, nutritious food, the change is dramatic. It's not a little change. You know, sometimes over the years we've taken some advice, eat more of this, eat less of that, try this vitamin, try that vitamin. And honestly, I've done those things my whole life. I don't notice a difference. Nothing seems to make much difference when you're eating that standard American diet, but you make this change and everything changes, and it's pretty hard to ignore that. Let's get another call in if we can here. Let's go to Ohio. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim.
Crazy
like a box. That's what I got to say about that. But anyhow, every single time I listen to a program, I learn something new. Just incredible. I kind of stalled out on my ketogenic diet, too. I'm at 58 pounds and holding. But I think you answered the question, the previous caller, about maybe too many nuts in a diet, because I eat a lot of almonds and pistachios and stuff like that. So I'm going to have to look at that.
That can be one of the mistakes. Kim, I'll throw another one out here that I'm sad to report, but you know, when I first went full-blown ketogenic, I cut alcohol out completely for many, many months. And I got lower in weight than I wanted to be. And then I made some changes, and I came back up to a comfortable weight. And then I noticed I would drink some wine once in a while, and then I got back into the habit of drinking at least a glass of wine every night. When I cook, I like to have a glass of wine. And then I usually have one more. So I was probably drinking two glasses a night. And I started noticing I was gaining about a pound a week. And I couldn't figure out what it was. I'm not exercising, so I thought maybe it was that. But I thought, you know what? Let me try cutting out the wine for a week and see what happens. And within a couple days of not drinking any wine at all at night, I was back into full-blown ketosis, and I dropped 5 pounds in about 10 days. So
yeah.
I think that even though it wasn't a lot of alcohol, I think it was enough that it was keeping – and I think I started to retain some of the water again. And I think that's why as soon as I went back to ketosis, I could feel my body releasing the water. The weight went away. So I'm back to wine on special occasions, not every night.
Yeah, unfortunately, but it's a good thing. But, yeah, your body has to burn that off first, and it can go and burn the ketones.
Yeah, so, Dave, try making a couple little tweaks like that. The nuts do seem to be something that some people tend to overdo.
Okay, great. Oh, no, I got another comment for you. I just finished your recommendation on Eat the Yolks by Liz Wolf. What a great book. Is there any chance to get her to speak? Is there any chance to get her to speak at the CMC? That'd be wonderful.
You know, that's an interesting thought. I had that thought as well. I think she lives there in the Midwest somewhere, so it wouldn't be a big travel issue for her. And she is an excellent speaker. She has some podcasts. If you go do some searching, you'll find some of her podcasts. And she's a good speaker, and she's entertaining, and she really knows her stuff. So
absolutely,
it's something we might look into.
One thing, one final thing in parting, on the occasion where you can't make the call-in show, let's say we give that time slot to Kim there. Maybe she could do an extra destination health during the week when you can't make the show. All right.
Oh, there they go, Kim. They're volunteering you for more work.
Hello. Dave, I would love to. We're here for you guys.
Absolutely. Kim, there's the music. We did it again. We blew right through an hour of the show. We'll see you back here next time. Thanks for joining us. Great questions, and keep up the good work. We'll be here to answer your questions next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. Thanks, everybody. Hey, Kim, I have a homework assignment for you.
Okay. Bring it.
All right. So, you know, in our typical hour, we have, you know, our open, and we need to work on a good open for Destination Health.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that together.
Mm-hmm.
The second song I always play is I Want My Money Back, and then
oh,
we use
yeah.
another piece out of that for the close. Your homework is to find us two good pieces of music for this hour.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
I can get my kids on this.
That's right. There
that's
you go.
That's pretty awesome. Or, hey, if anybody out there has any ideas, email to support. That sounds great.
Good idea. All right. Well,
okay. Thanks
again, and we'll do this again soon.
Thanks, everyone. Bye now.
Thanks, everybody.